Right, good evening. My name is Ahmed Shalki. I'm the editor of the International Socialist Review. I'll start, I think, by saying that the whole world situation, in particular the situation here in the United States, has changed dramatically since September the 11th in almost any facet of life, be it in terms of politics, economics, the whole contours of political discussion in this country. It's perhaps no better illustrated by what existed prior to September the 11th and what exists after September the 11th when we look at the global justice movement. This was the issue of our magazine in the summer of last year, July of last year. It had 44 contributors, a number of voices from the global justice movement. Some of the names I'm sure that are here will be familiar to people. Bellow, Chomsky, Henwood, Lowy, Oscar Oliveira, Rania Masri. A demonstration of 300,000 in Genoa, Italy, which I had the great pleasure of attending, although not the so pleasant view of what happened on the last day of the demonstration, which the previous speaker alluded to, was brutally attacked by the government. One young man was killed, shot twice in the head. The governments that back capitalist globalization internationally were put on the defensive, because here was the outcome of their attempt to criminalize dissent, to make dissent something illegal and peripheral, and instead of having become illegal and peripheral, it drew in more and more people. Not only on the streets of Italy, remember the 300,000 march after the police had shot Carlo Giuliani, and after the demonstration of the 300,000, as the previous speaker mentioned, they broke into the offices of the Genoa Social Forum and of the Indy Media Center, which was across the street, beat people senseless, those that they woke up and beat, destroyed all evidence in an attempt to get rid of any evidence. Why do I start with that? Because that was in July, in September of this year, an expected 100,000 people were to march against the politics and policies of globalization in Washington, D.C. Then September the 11th. What's the most immediate impact of September the 11th, and why I started with that, is that one of the people who contributed to our magazine was this morning picked up on the following charges. And I'll read you the communication to give you an idea of the change. On November 27th, at 7:30 a.m., the police in Cochabamba, Bolivia, arrested Oscar Oliveira, spokesperson for the Coordinadora, the Coalition in Defense of Water and Life, on charges of, and these words should be clear to people, sedition, conspiracy, instigating public disorder, criminal association, and other charges. What I'm attempting to describe in using the examples of the demonstrations in July in Italy, the non-demonstration, that is, the demonstration that was called off, and to the credit of a number of people involved in maintaining organization, a few thousand people did show up against the war. There is an attempt not only to continue to criminalize dissent, but now to criminalize dissent even further to the fullest extent of the law. Internationally, it has taken the form of war, and the war in Afghanistan is, as George Bush yet again yesterday insisted, it is a war that will go on for years and will go on to other countries. If you think the quick victory, in quotations, the collateral damage of Afghanistan is the end of the picture, and you supported the war in a misguided effort to seek justice, it is time to wake up to what the United States government plans to unleash along with its alliances. Being part of the independent media, I define as being the following. Independent of big business, and independent of the big political parties that big business funds. That is what it means to be independent media. And there is a crying need in this country for independent media and independent politics, because it is not as though British newspapers are more equitably owned. Rupert Murdoch doesn't have one policy for the United States and another for Britain. It happens to be that the political voices of opposition in this country since the days of the Vietnam War, of the civil rights and black power movement, of the attempted rejuvenation of a labor movement, have been pushed back And they will use September the 11th to try to bury it. That is one of the first reasons why we say no to their response on September the 11th. Matt Rothschild referred to history, our sense of what has happened in the past. This is not the first time that an event, whether real or imagined, and don't worry, I am not here questioning what everybody saw on September the 11th. I mean that event, as real as it was, as opposed to fabricated events that have led to the call for war and the suppression of civil liberties and the attacks on immigrants and so on and so forth, are as deep as is this country. Because one of the things that September the 11th shows us is not the beauty and value of freedom that George Bush talks about, but of the Janus two-faced nature of American society. That it was born with in the days of slavery, all men are created equal. Let's leave women aside for the moment, and certainly leave slaves. But also, that the battle against terror is a battle that conveniently includes terrorists, so long as they're our terrorists, according to George Bush, and we're against those terrorists who, even if we armed, financed them, built them up, built their network, built their underground caves, etc., etc., are now the people we don't like. I was going through my bookshelf and found this book. So, written in 1970, it's called The Revolutionary Writer, Writings from Contemporary Revolutionary Leaders Throughout the World. John Duration. I thought I'd probably be arrested carrying this book through an airport. That is, let's not insult the intelligence and security officers. In here are writings of people like the Viet Cong, Nelson Mandela, people from Cambodia, people from North Vietnam, people from Africa, people from Morocco, people from Algeria, who today would conveniently fit the label of terrorism. This is what this war is about. It's about advancing the interests. I started the global justice movement for a reason. The interests of those corporations and those interests that were advanced economically, they will use this crisis to advance their interests militarily. It's not the first time, and it's not that radical an idea. You know, when it's on our screens, in Rebs, people applauded. 78 years too late. Do you remember the scene? John Reed, the journalist at a Portland get-together?
Liberal Club,
there, thank you. Even better, thank you for reminding me. Even more fitting. What's this war about, if I remember the phrase? And John Reed answers, profits. Silence in the room. It will go down. When the Gulf War took place, it was a war to save poor little Kuwait. It was the first time that the journalist pools, which had been decided on in 1984, were brought into existence, corral the journalists. Not that they needed that much corralling, but here you go. You get even more loyal journalists in a journalist pool because you got the pass. Now you're part of the in crowd. So there you go. That war, it turned out to be, was not about democracy, was not about saving poor little Kuwait, was about advancing a decade of globalization. A decade of free markets and open markets to U.S. goods. That's what that war was about. I believe this war is like that, except it wants to take with it the kinds of social and political ramifications that we saw after the First World War and after the Second World War. And Matthews again referred to them. The Palmer Raids and McCarthyism. And I believe we are seeing the beginnings of the implementation of a series of legal structures and a series of measures that certainly are competitive with Joe McCarthy. Here's a couple. Here's the doublespeak. The Wall Street Journal instructing its newspapers on what terrorism is and isn't. You have to shape it. Terrorism, says the Wall Street Journal, should be used carefully and specifically to describe those people and non-governmental organizations that plan to execute acts of violence against civilians and non-combatant targets. Define the reality, make the law, and then create the climate. Here is the statement of Representative Saxby Chambliss, a Republican from Georgia, who happens to be the chair of the House Committee on Terrorism and Homeland Security. Here's what Chambliss thinks about the present situation in the United States and how to act to Muslims and Arabs. Quote, Chambliss told 30 local officials in Valdosta, Georgia, that to combat terrorism, a Georgia sheriff could be turned loose to, quote, arrest every Muslim that comes across the state line. This isn't some right winger. This is some, well, sorry. This isn't just any right winger. This happens to be the chairman of the House Committee on Terrorism and Homeland Security, running in a competitive race with Joe McCarthy somewhat posthumously. The USA Patriot Act, the attacks on civil liberties, so on, are an attempt to recreate on the domestic front what the period after the Second World War saw, which was what was referred to as the American century, the century of American economic expansion under free markets, and always at the end of the day with the threat of American military power there to enforce it. If people have forgotten, those were the good old days of Foster, of Dulles's, of the CIA, of the assassination attempts against Castro. Well, if not, let's have him lose his beard. Maybe he'll remember the plot that they hatched. They never undertook it to put some stuff in drink that would lead him to lose his hair. These were the plots. And when that one wasn't one of the ones approved. But the invasion of the Dominican Republic was, the invasion of Lebanon was, the invasion of one after another country was. That is what they would like to get themselves to. Now, I say that knowing that everybody in this room who has spoken out against the war, who has attempted to organize against the war, knows two things. There is a huge audience that is looking for information, facts, arguments, discussion, polemic, contacts. There is the possibility of turning what are thousands of disorganized people, meaning that they're not connected necessarily into movements, into networks, into a voice that the independent press, in quotations, the independent media outlets can give expression to, but also require in order, that is, also require those numbers in order to be effective in transforming policy in this country. Because it is not only that they would like to make the world that way, they have won a number of victories. They went into Afghanistan. They have public support in the polls. They scored a quick military victory. I would venture to say two things about that. One, something that we learned in the Gulf War. When George Bush Sr. was in office and he was rated at 90%, I remember we held a meeting about the bombing, the end of the war, and said one simple thing. If he's at 90%, there's only one way he can go, and that's down. Now, we said that polemically, but that was in February of 1991. He was gone in 1992. Now, that, I think, can be true of the present administration, understanding the following, that it'll be a much harder struggle. Because it wasn't just about getting rid of George Bush, because Clinton carried on the Iraq policy, and American interests in the Middle East carried on, and the oppression of Palestinians went on, and the starving of Iraqi children went on, and the sanctions against Iraq went on. That is to say, it's a harder struggle because it's not only about who sits in the White House, but also that they have more at stake. I believe that they think that this is the godsend for the United States to reestablish its influence. And every other regime in the world is seeing it in the same way. The Bolivians, the Russians in Chechnya, the Kashmir struggle, the Israelis in Palestine, you get the idea. Every government will try to use it for their own advent. And therefore, they will pull out all the stops. It will require us to be organized, informed, collaborative with one another, and prepared to fight when it matters. Frederick Douglass was fond of saying, power concedes nothing without a struggle. It never has, it never will. In a situation in which they are gunning for us, believe you me, power concedes nothing without a struggle. It never has, it never will. And the history of this country is a history of proud resistance, as well as that of imperial and arrogant governments and employers. You have both. I hold here the precursor to our magazine. It's a bit pompous to say that, but it was the International Socialist Review put out in the teens, which brought together some of the best anti-war, anti-militarist, socialist voices in this country. It had a simple slogan, the fighting magazine of the working class. Good slogan. Should be reappropriated and reborn. That is, we also are not independent of the people who we fight with and for in order to create a new and better society. That is, I am for a media and an independent media which has a point of view and which is honest to itself and some principles. And the last point, really, is to say this. I believe that we may well see some reverses in the next few years, and some strong ones. And therefore, the appeal to get organized, to join political organizations, to contribute to to independent media sources, to write for them, to distribute them, to help more be born, is a necessary task. But so too is remembering the history of our very own movement in this country. The anti-war left was suppressed. The Palmer raid saw the expulsion of thousands of foreigners from this country. But the basic injustice of American society saw a movement repressed in one decade found a voice in the next decade in the CIO. Remember that the 20s were the years of rapacious avarice on the part of the newfound millionaires. The bubble, the stock market crash, remember all that, produced the CIO. The end of World War II and the defeat of fascism saw, after 10 years, the rise of a civil rights movement. That is to say, the issues that gave rise to the global justice movement, the issues that drive the labor movement in this country, the issues that continue to dominate the lives of black people in this country, racial profiling, police violence, the death penalty, all exist. They may have been taken off the front burner, but the more they push, as they did in the past, those issues will find a way to coalesce and to come back in another form, if not the same as it was prior to September 11th, in a new and perhaps better form. I think it takes a lot more to be an activist for global justice who also is against war, and that the implicit connection, economic domination by the U.S., is as wrong as military domination, no matter what the excuse, what the rationale. And I'll end with this, and this really is the last point. There's two of them. When I first moved to this country in 1976, I had a memory of the United States that was born out of the Vietnam War, which I think is worth sharing. It's not because it's autobiographical, believe me. The first public demonstration that as opposed to my private ones. The first demonstration I ever attended, my father was briefly a boxer in Egypt, and the first demonstration I ever attended was in defense of an American-born boxer who had been stripped of his crown. I knew America as two things: the American government, Muhammad Ali, and the Black Panthers. And that was the demonstration that my father took me on, not just because he was a boxer, there were also 750,000 Egyptians on that march, who sympathized and knew that America was black people and America were the people at the top. That is, that there were two Americas. And that is a tradition that we need to resurrect. And I'll say that the year that I moved here, I had the opportunity of interviewing a person who since then died, a man by the name of Harvey O'Connor, who wrote a brilliant book called Revolution in Seattle. He was a seaman in Seattle. He became an activist. Long history. He was hauled before the HUAC hearings in the 1950s and asked to recant. When I saw him, he was still an activist, still a left-winger, still believed that a socialist future was possible in this country. That's the name of his book. And I said to him, what was the proudest moment of your life? He said, well, when I stood up to HUAC and said, I refuse to recognize your right to question me. It is time for us to say we are right to stand for justice, to stand against this war on terrorism, and to fight for a better tomorrow.